Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is novelist Alice Lichtenstein. Lichtenstein received her MFA from Boston University, where she was also named the Boston University Fellow in Creative Writing. She has received a NYFA grant in fiction and was twice a fellow at the McDowell Colony. She is the author of three novels, The Genius of the World and Lost. Her new novel, and what we'll be discussing on today's show, is The Crime of Being. It was recently nominated for a Pulitzer Prize, and it was published by Upper Hand Press. Lichtenstein is a professor of creative writing at Hartwick College. And welcome back.
Thank you, Tish. It is an absolute joy to be here.
So, now, to set up this novel, to set up the plot, tell us what it's about.
So, this novel takes place in the aftermath of a white-on-black hate crime in a small town in upstate New York. And one of the important explorations for me as a novelist was to look at all sides of the crime, all the people involved, and the town as well. The town is essentially a character through one of my characters.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you're trying to set up and see all sides, but tell us the specifics. It's a young black teenager.
Yes. So a young black teenager, Gunther, who is the adoptive son of white parents and is the only black person in his high school. One afternoon on a beautiful day in which everyone's just hanging out in the park, out of the blue, a white classmate takes after him with a gun and the clear intent to shoot him. Gunther survives, as does the white assailant who tries to take his own life. But the result is an intense examination on every close person involved in the incident. So my characters include, and this will sound daunting, 9 different voices.
Yeah.
And they include both the white parents of the black teenager, the white parents of the white teenager, the DA, a Catholic priest, a townswoman, and so on. And one of the chief things that I'm interested in looking at is, on some level, everyone is suffering. And I needed to examine that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it certainly comes out loud and clear. You are very fair to all the characters, it seems to me. But you also have the town as a character. So tell us why. Do you think this is a small town phenomenon, perhaps, or what?
Well, again, I think it's an instance of a small town in rural America being a microcosm for the larger experience of being in America today. And I was fascinated and horrified by an incident that resembled the one in my book, took place in a town, not the one I live in. And I observed that the transformation of an attitude toward both the victim, the initial victim, black teenager, and the white perpetrator. And as national media came to focus on the town, as it happens in all of these incidents, this horrible thing happens, and then it's the media swarming and there are outsiders swarming and looking at a town and trying to analyze
and judging with very little information.
Exactly, Tish. Judging with very little information. So that causes a really interesting level of defensiveness from the point of view of a townsperson. And it's something that on one hand I identify with, but on another hand, as a writer and as a human being, and they can be both, I needed to examine, frankly, a level of white fragility that isn't necessarily apparent. So, for instance, I'm very interested in how people choose to live where they live, what their illusions are about who they are and what their choices are. On another level, the novel looks at universalities. So I mentioned a universality of suffering, but also there in the novel is a universality of love for one's child.
Yeah, yeah. You know what I found really interesting, too, was the way the town was very sympathetic to this boy who got shot. And then suddenly the whole thing blows up into this tribalism, which is absolutely fascinating to me. Taking sides by color, by class. To talk a little bit more about that. That, to me, is a remarkable thing about this country.
Well, I so appreciate your deep reading of the novel, because that's exactly one of the things that I do want to point to. And but I should mention, though, that when I say point to, I am not a polemicist. This novel is not it's not a message novel. As soon as I step into a character's head, it's fiction. And as a writer, it's the shape-shifting, it's the need to understand from a compassionate point of view each character. No one is set up to be the fall guy. No one is there to be attacked. I need to be inside and really try and understand the human motivations.
Yeah.
But as you point out, there is tribalism and there is classism. And these, again, if you look at the town as an organism under attack, because that's how they feel.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you see the ways in which the lines are drawn. And everyone has an instinctive need to protect themselves, which, again, there are many ironies in this book. But, again, that's one of the ironies. When under attack, everyone needs to defend themselves. And everyone feels under attack. Well, of course, in the novel itself, the only person who is physically under attack is Gunther, the black teenager.
Yeah, yeah.
So that idea of being a victim or being under attack turns out to also be one of the universalities of the novel.
Yeah. And one of the other broad pictures to me was the fact that all these people were in some ways hurt themselves, which to me was, and you know, none of them were good or bad. It was not black and white per se. So talk to us about that. I mean, were you looking for this universal aspect, or did that come out as you were writing?
Well, thank you for that observation as well. So yes, everyone is hurt in some way, and this is the sort of the magical thing that happens as a writer, and just is almost indescribable. But when you enter the life of the character, the head of the character, that character starts to tell you things.
Mm.
This is not woo-woo. This book took 7 years to write. I hate to say that, but it's true.
Wow, wow.
And one of the reasons is that some of those characters really held back on me. It sounds, again, very odd, but there's some level in which you feel as a writer, I felt as a writer, that I had to prove that I was really there for that character, that character could trust me. And then stuff just starts to surface. So this novel has gone through many, many, many revisions. And with each one, it felt as though I truly was getting something new and different and a much deeper understanding of the character as I wrote.
Yes, and that comes through loud and clear in the novel. Really, I felt your deep understanding of all the characters, which to me is remarkable in a novel like this, because often even the author mm-hmm. is not particularly sympathetic to the perpetrators, and yet you are sympathetic to all of them, which that's what's so remarkable. But tell me, because I'm fascinated by it, how did you come up with the title, The Crime of Being?
Oh, well, that was sort of a gift from God, as they say. This is terrible because I can't actually remember who said it, but I remember something floated over the radio, and all I caught was someone saying, the crime of being. And it was such a mesmerizing phrase for me. Sometimes I really do stop the car and write something down when I'm listening to the radio in the car. And I do pull over, I promise. And this one was just The Crime of Being. Now, I had had a working title, quite a different one-word working title, which I'm not going to reveal because I'm just not. But that I had a working title for 6 years, and then heard this.
Really?
And that phrase then, when you, if and when, hopefully when you read the book, you'll see how important that title is in something that Gunther articulates.
And Gunther is the victim.
Gunther is the black teenager.
Yeah.
But it also resonated for me, not just from Gunther's point of view, but this idea, I don't know if I should go into how much of an explanation I should go, or let the reader sort of contemplate that title as you read.
Mm.
But again, it does relate to this idea that everyone is hurt in some way. Everyone is suffering. And for some of us, for instance, for Gunther, simply being black in a majority white world of his small town is a crime. It's a crime for him simply to be who he is.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's devastating.
Yeah. And I felt the universal title.
Yeah.
Because the crime of just being alive. Mm-hmm. Was what I kept thinking mm-hmm. of. And it has to do with a lot of the characters in this book.
Yes.
in a different kind of way. You know what I found interesting? You have the shooter's father ask an interesting question. Mm-hmm. He says, "Since when are American citizens not allowed the freedom to shoot someone?" That is fascinating to me in this violent, absolutely chaotic world that we're really living in now.
Yes, Sean Sr., the white assailant's father, is just such a complex character.
Yes.
But I think, and I don't want to really use a shorthand, but I would say that in many ways he represents an American who is feeling more and more marginalized by virtue of economic forces that he can't control.
And changing demographics, right.
Changing demographics. And his fear, I mean, in his own mind, I see him as someone who feels as though they are being hunted down in his own way. He's been targeted by, in his mind, a majority culture now that is against him and not white, but even of the white, because there's a classism aspect to this by the white elite. And there's a place in the novel where he's noticing how these rich white people from downstate coming into town wearing brand new Carhartts, you know, that kind of they're yes. they're taking over.
Yep.
So again, you know, this whole idea of who feels marginalized, who feels under attack, is more nuanced than what is the obvious.
If you're just joining us, my guest is novelist Alice Lichtenstein. We're talking about her new book called The Crime of Being. Now, because this is based loosely on a, you know, a village or a town, but it's a real tale of a real happening, why didn't you make it into historical fiction instead of a novel?
So that's, again, a very interesting question. Quite honestly, I wouldn't pose it as the alternate being historical fiction. The other possibilities that present themselves to me would have been nonfiction or straight journalism.
Mm, mm.
And, of course, there's some very wonderful practitioners above these crafts, and I admire their work. But it's really interesting. If you're a novelist, if you're a fiction writer, you have absolutely no interest in writing in these other forms. Well, I should just use first person. I have no interest in writing in these other forms.
So you wouldn't want to have the burden, perhaps.
It's not even a matter of burden. My interest is not in trying to create some kind of factual record. In entering, as I say, even starting with something that has some factual basis, I want to enter the characters. I want the freedom to, as soon as I'm in a character's head, I'm in fiction. And so I'm exploring a level, it's an interiority that's interesting to me. If a journalist, presumably, and never having written journalism, I'm on shaky ground here, but I'm assuming a journalist does not even dare to speculate on what the actors are thinking or doing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's not journalism. And in some wonderful nonfiction, I think of, say, John Krakauer, Into the Wild. Well, there's a very, you know, he has a terrific narrative structure. But again, he's not speculating on the interior of these real people. I am all about the interior.
But so, that's the freedom of the novelist,
that
too,
is
which
the freedom
is
of
so
the novelist.
All-encompassing.
Exactly.
I can understand that, yeah.
And then also, I need to be able to take off. I mean, to me, it is, in fact, fiction. Because the universality of the experience comes when, and the identification, I think, comes when you are in fictional characters. And that's my experience. I read very little nonfiction.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as interesting to me as being in a novel that has the richness and complexity and language of fiction. Yeah.
Yeah. I was wondering how much research that you did, too, because you talk about hate crime charges.
Mm-hmm.
And you do get intimately in the heads of these African-American African-American child and other African-Americans in the book, and his birth parents you talk about. Tell us how much research you did.
So in terms of the details of hate crime, that was relatively easy research. I decided to use New York State's hate crime laws, and I read about them. I interviewed several lawyers and got, you know, that exactly how things would progress, and all those kinds of details had to be correct. Interestingly, one of the very important revisions of the novel happened after I'd sold the novel, in the month before it went to print, which seems like a pretty risky thing to do. But I have an extremely perceptive editor, Ann Starr at Upper Hand Press. Ann Starr is a grandmother to a biracial grandson.
Ah.
And very perceptively, she loved the novel. She said to me, "I think you're holding back on Gunther." She said, "I think you know a whole lot more, and I just want you to give yourself permission to write it all out."
That's very interesting. Instead of a caricature.
Well, it was so interesting because she was right. In these days, it's an enormous step to write from someone from a different gender, from a different race, all those other considerations. And there was a judgmental voice in my mind as I wrote him, and so there was a cautiousness. When she gave me the permission, and she could, in my mind, because she had that authority, she felt I was completely on the right track from having her own experience of her daughter, her raising her biracial son in an all-white community. And she said, "Go for it." So I spent a month, 10-hour writing days, full blast, revising Gunther. And when I finished, I had written the character the way I needed to, the way I truly felt, the way I, again, was able, you know, he said, okay. You know, he trusted me.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there it is. And people can, of course, judge whatever, how they will judge whatever they feel as if I've gotten that or not. But so far, that feedback has been pretty remarkable. The other, and this was not a research element that I ever would have chosen, but about 4 years into the book, I had four black students who were the victims of a hate crime. They were collectively in a downtown. And they came to me for support.
Mm.
So suddenly, and I said, this is really weird. I'm now in my novel. I mean, I'm now, real life is, you know, life imitates art, as I think Oscar Wilde said. And there it was, uphand and personal. And we worked together for almost a year. It involved many meetings with the police department, with administration at the college where I teach, lots and lots and lots of conversations. And I saw firsthand the very, very deep levels of racism that exist in our towns. And again, it's not a kind of overt. It's on that level that it's, I hate to say this, but it feels like it's almost in the DNA. You know, it's in the sense of we all fear the other.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there it is. And that came out over and over again from both sides of the equation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, where is the how is trust built?
And that is a tough one, no matter what we're talking about in regard to human beings right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So after having taken so many years to write this novel and gone through so many changes and research, and well, what do you hope people will take from it at this point in our culture?
Well, I'm going to take it from this high and mighty conversation, which I'm loving, but I'm going to make a really, really bottom line a declaration here.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, no, I really wanted to write a novel that would absolutely grab the reader. I wanted to write something that was paced so that when you started it, you couldn't put it down.
Mm.
And I'm well aware, from my own experience and from what many friends have told me, people usually have only about 15 minutes to read these days, and it's just before you go to bed.
Ah.
So I have short chapters, and it moves. And I thought the most wonderful thing that could happen if someone started reading that 15 minutes before they went to bed and then went, oh, I just can't put it down, and stays up all night and calls in sick to finish it.
You know? Oh, well, yes, but I can understand that. I thought that short chapter tact was really brilliant.
Thank you.
Because it does keep it almost keeps an intensity going,
yes.
which is remarkable to say about short chapters, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I'll be honest, I'm someone who I love fiction, I read a lot. But I've also been really hooked recently by, you know, some of the amazing television that has, television has been raised to an art form.
Yes, it has.
In some instances. And I looked at that. And I said, well, why am I willing to sit down and watch something like Breaking Bad, which I think is brilliant, with violence and all these things? But it was a combination of character and plot, of course, but pacing. You know, I realize there's a lot to be learned from these really brilliantly paced shows that can be translated into literary fiction, and this is a serious novel.
Well,
but
that's what you've done.
Yeah,
that's exactly what you've done. And what has been some of the response?
Well, it's ahem. Do I do the humble brag, Tish, or do I just,
Do whatever you think is true.
No, I've gotten just absolutely incredible responses. And two kinds of responses have just meant the most to me. One, I have a dear friend whose son and daughter-in-law have adopted three children of color. And she, my friend, immediately said, I'm buying this for my son and daughter-in-law. You have absolutely captured a certain experience.
Ah.
So that meant a tremendous amount to me. Another response on a different end, and this just happened very recently, a friend came up to me just after a recent reading, and she said, I'm giving you the ultimate compliment. My daughter, her 20-year-old daughter had come to the reading. She said, Mom, I want to read.
Wow.
So, you know, I teach at Hartwick College. I have 36 amazing students. And I guess one goal would be if every one of them decide not to buy the book, it's in the library. But if they were captured by this book and by its voices and were motivated to read an entire novel, that would be that would feel just great.
You know, I think your novel kind of encompasses something that a lot of people don't understand. They think novels are fantasy and they're not real, but there is so much real life in novels. Please, people, go out. You're going to learn about yourself. You're going to learn about your community, even learn about your family. I think about Joyce Carol Oates and some of our great novelists, too, who touch on everything that would make you realize that novels are not fantasy. I just want to ask you real quickly, did you learn anything in the 7 years that you worked on this book as a writer, as a member of the community? Tell me.
What a wonderful question. Yes, I learned a lot. As I mentioned previously, you know, each character in this novel, this sounds, at the risk of really sounding corny, but each character did teach me something. And what was, I have to say, you know, most surprising to me was to find out that I loved even the very difficult characters, the very, very angry characters who you might, well, I might feel uncomfortable with if I'm sitting next to them at the bar, you know. And now when I see someone in real life that resembles one of my characters, I, like, my heart just goes out. You know, it's really weird, but I, well, again, this, I know it sounds a little presumptuous, but I just really learned how to love certain people that I would not have ordinarily found that feeling for.
Yeah, I understand that. And also, that book also can make people feel comfortable with characters that they've never met, they don't think they'd ever understand. So I think that's the fascinating thing about your novel. Well, Alice, we are almost out of time. Do you have any contact information, readings coming up in the next month or two?
Oh, thank you. Yes. So I have two readings coming up. November 22nd at Northshire Saratoga in Saratoga Springs, I will be reading and signing 7 p.m. I will also be in Ithaca January 10th
at Buffalo Street Books.
Buffalo Street Books. It starts at 5.
That's great. Yeah. And contact information, website, anything?
Yes. So there is a Facebook page for The Crime of Being. And if you would like to email me directly, you can email me at lichtenstein@hartwick.edu. Love to hear from you.
Great. Well, Alice Lichtenstein, thank you so much for joining us. Again, I've been talking to Alice Lichtenstein about her new novel, The Crime of Being. Thank you.
Thank you, Tish. And I have to say that for all of us who've been interviewed by you, you've been an amazing, amazing treasure for our whole listening community.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.